Welcome, everybody, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. It's nice to see you, Avi.
It is really nice to see you, Cherry. And I was actually going to say it's nice to be back in our host chairs, but they're actually not the same chairs. The week we were gone, they swapped us out with the old chairs with these beautiful new chairs. I'm very
comfortable. I was scared to sit in it. I was like, I have dark jeans. I don't want to mess them up.
Honestly, I'm considering going out for another week and seeing if, you know, I come back, there's like a big bowl of candy or something, or maybe like one of those foot massage machines. You know, I leave for a week and things improve.
Hint, hint to everybody that's listening, but it's a perfect day to come back.
It is indeed.
There was
we timed it
big
perfectly.
News. And so today on the show, you probably heard, Vice President Harris just announced that Governor Tim Walz will be her running mate. So this hour, we're going to be talking about who exactly is the Minnesota governor. And what will he mean for the Democratic ticket and the race? We've got our questions, but we want to hear from you. You can call us 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. Avi, were you up part of the wait? I was up early with the TV on, just waiting.
Refresh, for sure. And we're also going to talk, Cherry, about who she didn't pick.
Yeah,
Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. So we've got a panel together. We're going to introduce you to Tim Walz. We're going to talk about the ramifications of the pick. And really, we want to, our big question this hour, do you think it was the right pick? What do you make of Tim Walz as the choice for the Democratic nominee for Vice President of the United States? Again, that number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. In the week that we were gone, Cherry, I was in West Virginia watching a stupid amount of Olympics coverage. You were doing something far more interesting. You were in Chicago, right?
I was.
And what were you doing in Chicago?
I was at the National Association of Black Journalists Convention.
And not too much happened, right?
A lot of stuff happened. And let me tell you, I flew into Chicago Wednesday and put my bag in the hotel and walked right into NABJ's interview with former President Donald Trump.
Oh, yes. I did hear about this.
Yeah.
And in my vacation cocoon, this thing broke through.
Yeah. Yes. I had friends texting me who are not journalists asking me, are you OK? So before I tell you about my reaction to the interview, when it was announced that former President Trump would be at NABJ, tension started right away online. And there was this big internal debate within NABJ over whether NABJ is a journalist organization where we should invite political candidates like Trump and VP Harris, or if we are an advocacy group for the fair treatment of black journalists such that it should be a safe space and we should keep people who we think are hostile to black journalists or whomever out of that space. And so that set the scene for former President Donald Trump coming to NABJ. And you probably heard that he made some comments.
Yes.
Some of the standout comments, I'll say, upset a lot of biracial folks. And I want to play one of those comments right now.
She was always of Indian heritage, and she was only promoting Indian heritage. I didn't know she was black until a number of years ago when she happened to turn black, and now she wants to be known as black. So I don't know, is she Indian or is she black?
She has always identified as a black woman.
I respect
she went to a historically
either
black
one.
College.
I respect either one, but she obviously doesn't, because she was Indian all the way, and then all of a sudden she made a turn and she became a black person.
Just to be clear, sir, do
and
you
I
believe
think,
that
I think
she is
somebody should look into that too when you ask a continue in a very hostile, nasty tone.
So you were there. And he's talking about Kamala Harris.
Just so to clarify, that question was where he was talking about the vice president's racial or an ethnic identity. And they asked about her being, you know, a woman of color, black woman in the seat. And he said he didn't even know. And so this, of course, upset people because this raised questions about race versus ethnicity. And of course, he falsely claimed that the vice president had shifted her identity when she had not. And so this another big point of contention was, you know, the former president talking about whether or not Vice President Harris is a DEI pick, you know, diversity, equity and inclusion. If you don't know what that stands for, that was also sparked some controversy. He also talked about black jobs and he said a black job is anybody that has a job. So that was another point. Hmm. And a thing that stood out to me also is his, you know, opinion about J.D. Vance, his vice presidential pick, who he said during that conversation.
Didn't matter.
But there was a lot of things. And I'll tell you, Avi, it was just a surreal moment after surreal moment.
And you,
after
you were
surreal.
In the room.
I was on the third row.
Third row. You were right there.
I was right there.
How would you describe the mood in the room?
Tense.
Yeah.
It was like,
I couldn't tell if that was
tense.
Nervous laughter or genuine. People were sort of laughing and gasping. It was a sort of reaction you don't hear a lot.
It was, they were laughing, it was like because they didn't know what else to do.
Huh.
It wasn't like laughing, ha ha, funny. It was laughing like, I can't believe I'm sitting here listening to this.
Yeah.
And I will say, my take is, I think NABJ should have done this interview. I think it provided a service to voters of this country, and it was a reminder, you know, of who the candidate is. And so for folks who were against the interview, I think that it is our job as journalists to inquire. There was also live fact checking done by Politico. People could, you know, go online and see the live fact checking. But, you know, it was an interesting moment, and everybody was talking about it.
Well, front seat to history.
Yeah.
Or third row seat to history, at least.
Third row. Close enough, but not too close.
Pretty close. You mentioned what former President Trump said about his VP pick, J.D. Vance.
Yeah.
And now we're going to move on to today's biggest news story. And I'm sure you've heard by now, after 2 weeks of deliberation, Vice President Kamala Harris has picked Minnesota Governor Tim Walz to be her running mate. Cheri, I did a little research, as I'm wont to do.
All right.
In the month of June, the name Tim Walz appeared in articles on the New York Times website 7 times.
Okay.
7 mentions of Tim Walz. Mm-hmm. The first 5 days of August before today, 30 times. So it's safe to say that in the last few weeks, large swaths of America are suddenly learning a whole lot about Minnesota's second term governor.
And now that Tim Walz is the Harris campaign's pick for VP, that name isn't going anywhere. And tonight, Tim Walz makes his VP candidate debut at a rally here in Philly. So who exactly is he? And is he a smart pick for Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris? We've got experts here to break it all down. In the studio, we have Solomon Jones, Philadelphia Inquirer columnist and WURD radio host. Solomon, welcome back to Studio 2.
Thank you.
We also have Andy Riley, Republican National Committee man for Pennsylvania. Welcome, Andy.
Happy to be here.
And remotely, we have Kyle Stokes, reporter for the Axios Twin Cities newsletter. Kyle, welcome to Studio 2.
Great to be here.
And you know those Twin Cities are in the state of Minnesota,
oh,
folks.
Yes.
That's in part why we have Kyle on the program. We want your take, of course. Do you think Governor Walz is the right running mate for the Democratic ticket? Does a Harris-Walz ticket change the race? Email us, studio2@whyy.org, or give us a call, 888-477-WHYY.
So 16 days, that is how long Harris had to choose her running mate, and she chose Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, passing over Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. For my Pennsylvania folks, Solomon and Andy, I want to get your reaction. Andy, we'll start with you.
Well, I told your producer, Debbie, yesterday, I wouldn't be surprised if Walz was the pick, but I think it probably would have boded better for the Harris campaign to choose Shapiro. If you think in your campaign, if you're a consultant and you believe you must win Pennsylvania in order to win the presidency, you would think that Shapiro would provide a benefit. Now, the traditional wisdom is, and it's true, that vice presidential picks generally do not matter when it comes to folks voting for the presidency. But in this close of a race, you know, generally a vice presidential pick is a use of less than half a percentage point. In this close of a race, Shapiro may have provided that. Now, having said that, so I think from a Harris standpoint, if you felt you needed Pennsylvania to win, that would have been a safer place. So to me, that the Vice President Harris's campaign either believes that they can win Pennsylvania without Governor Shapiro, or they've written off Pennsylvania. So one of those two conclusions, I believe, were reached, and that then they went to Governor Minnesota.
Yeah. Solomon, your reaction to the pick?
So I think it was the safer pick. I think it was the more prudent pick. I think it was the more pragmatic pick. Shapiro, while very charismatic, a very smart politician, I think is someone who comes with some risk in terms of what's happening in Israel and his staunch support of that. Many of Kamala Harris's supporters don't support what's happening there. Mm-hmm. And I think that that would have been a sticking point for some of them. I think also you don't necessarily need Josh Shapiro to win Pennsylvania. I interviewed Pennsylvania Democratic Party Chair Sharif Street on my show earlier this morning, and he talked about the recent races, statewide races, that Democrats have won against Trump-like Republicans in the last few years, 2018, 2019, 2020. So, you know, over and over again, kind of beating them when Josh Shapiro wasn't on the ticket. Would he have helped? Sure. But there's a whole apparatus in place in which they can win, and they have to win Pennsylvania. Let's not you know, mince words about that. They have to win, but they believe, and the party believes, that they can win without Shapiro on the ticket.
I want to bring in this email from Catherine in Allentown, mm-hmm. who says, I want to share, I am overjoyed that Kamala Harris picked Tim Walz. My son, who is in his 40s, is also overjoyed. Walz is someone who has a good record in Minnesota with a coalition of farmers and progressives who achieved education, health care, and tax reform wins for regular Minnesotans. I appreciate that he has spoken with a positive voice and compassion on the need for a ceasefire in Gaza and a state for Palestinians. That's Catherine's perspective. And now I want to bring in Kyle Stokes, reporter for the Axios Twin Cities newsletter, because Catherine alluded to some things that the governor has done in Minnesota. So, Kyle, first, before we get into his biography, his backstory, what are his major accomplishments as governor of Minnesota?
Well, so Walz has been governor of Minnesota since 2019. He won in the 2018 elections. But really, the thing that made his national star start rising was in 2023, after the DFL party, which is the Democratic Party here in Minnesota, swept into control of all three chambers both chambers of the state house and obviously holding the governor's mansion as well. And with that, you know, trifecta control of state government, they were able to not only like enact a bunch of their policies, they also came in with a $17.5 billion surplus to spend. So they had a ton of money. And Walz came in, and the big thing that he did was fire the starting gun and say, we want to spend all of it. We don't want to put a lot of this money into tax relief. We don't want to put it into a rainy day fund. The Democrats here in Minnesota spent all of that money, or they spent a lot of it anyway. There's a new law that ensures 20 weeks of paid family and medical leave. There were changes that put Minnesota on a path to be carbon free by 2040. There's some disagreement about what that means, but it was a huge stride. Universal free school lunches. If you've seen a video of Tim Walz previously to this announcement, it's probably of a group of elementary school children embracing him after he passed this legislation. And I think that that's sort of where his star started rising, was because he went out and played hype man for these policies. These, you know, let's make no mistake, you know, progressive policy priorities that are somewhat at odds with his track record as being from, you know, this sort of like more conservative leaning district. But he came out and said, if you want to come after us for giving free lunches to kids, go ahead. We think that these policies are popular. And that's what's got Democrats here very excited. Democrats who, by the way, were leery of him. You know, he was not the favorite of the left when he was elected in 2018. He is now, and it's largely because he has enacted a large wish list of what Democrats in the state wanted.
Yeah, I got to ask you, Kyle, I mean, were you surprised at all that he was the ultimate pick? Your reaction?
Yeah. Yes. This was not something we were talking about within just the last few weeks. I think it speaks to that power. And by we, I mean, sort of the media establishment here in Minnesota. I think, we kind of like were looking around and assumed that there would be another national figure who would swoop in and be in this position. And obviously, like, Walz could have been in the cabinet mix. I think that's where we saw his ceiling. But, you know, as my colleague Tori Van Oot who covers state politics here in Minnesota for us, has reported, this is also the product of a very careful, you know, bid over the last few years by Walz's team to raise his national profile as head of the National Governors Association for the Democratic National Governors Association. So, I mean, that's a position that he's been kind of working on this for some time. But maybe it shouldn't have been a surprise. But yeah. I think there's still this. He's still this unknown quantity, and I think that's kind of what remains surprising about this, is that this is not a name that a lot of people who are not plugged into this are going to be hearing for the first time.
For sure. So maybe not quite as out of the blue as we assumed. We're going to get to a lot more on Governor Walz's backstory. You just heard from Kyle Stokes. We've been talking with Andy Reilly, Republican National Committee Man for Pennsylvania, and Solomon Jones, WURD radio host. Our big question this hour, what do you make of the pick for VP, Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota, not Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania? Email us, studio2@whyy.org, and we will be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron, and we are back talking about the big news that Minnesota Governor Tim Walz is joining Vice President Kamala Harris as her VP running mate. We've got three guests with us. Breaking it all down, Kyle Stokes, reporter for Axios Twin Cities. Solomon Jones, Philadelphia Inquirer columnist and WURD radio host. And Andy Reilly, Republican National Committee Man for Pennsylvania.
And the emails are coming in, and we're asking for your take on Harris's choice. Do you think she made the right pick? What do you think Tim Walz brings to the ticket? What do you think how do you think he will play in Pennsylvania? Send us your questions via email. It's studio2@whyy.org. You can also call 888-477-9499. That number again, 888-477-WHYY.
So now I want to play a clip before we get back into Tim Walz's background, because I think for a lot of people, he became part of this VP sweepstakes after an appearance on MSNBC's Morning Joe. This was an interview in July, and he used this very specific term to describe the Trump-Vance ticket while explaining how Republicans have made politics so divisive, at least in his words. Let's play that clip.
We do not like what has happened where we can't even go to Thanksgiving dinner with our uncle because you end up in some weird fight that is unnecessary. And I think bringing back people together, well, it's true. These guys are just weird. And it's, you know, they're running for He-Man Women Haters Club or something. That's what they go at. That's not what people are interested in.
All right. So Kyle Stokes, reporter for Axios Twin Cities. Is this the moment that Tim Walz kind of became a legit contender here? Is this the breakout moment? Because you said it was sort of a surprise, but maybe not so big a surprise. How did he really get into this thing?
I think if it wasn't the moment, it certainly seems like it from the outside. And I, you know, did want to be clear that I don't have any special insight into what the Harris campaign was thinking. But the moment definitely encapsulates something about how Walz speaks about progressive priorities and something that, you know, kind of makes him a unique or, you know, dare we say new commodity, you know, on the left talking he is like, I think it's hard to separate that moment and the way he talks from his background as this guy from, you know, he was born in rural Nebraska. He was in the National Guard. He's a football coach, a former high school, geography teacher, and sort of brings this plain spokenness, this sort of like, I guess, a commodity we grow out here in flyover country and brings it to the ticket. And I do think that there is a thought that kind of charm is going to be part of what his selling point is. And so, yeah, that does seem like the moment that raised his national profile, the national ticket picked up that weird language and started, picked up that handoff and started running it with it themselves. So that's definitely part of his appeal. I think it should we should label that Walz, you know, also I think what we're going to find out is how he does when he's not on the offensive, when his record is scrutinized, when the ticket's record is becoming scrutinized. And you know, this is one of those areas where, you know, we don't know how he reacts when he's going to be under the kind of pressure and scrutiny of the national spotlight when he's playing defense, which is also a part of the job of the vice president. So I don't want to, you know, walk away from this moment while saying like Tim Walz is really good on TV. He clearly is. But we don't know how good he is on TV in the moments that he's going to be most tested.
He's a defensive coordinator, but can he play his own defense? We shall see.
Yeah. And I want to play. Yeah. And I want to play this other clip. And this is Governor Tim Walz. He's talking with CNN's Jake Tapper a week ago about his accomplishments as governor. And he's talking about university background checks on firearms, protecting women's reproductive rights, and providing free breakfast and lunches to kids, and whether he's too progressive, something we've already seen the GOP say just this morning since he was announced his pick. Take a listen.
Do you think your record is an asset to the ticket, or would it risk fueling Trump's attacks as you being a big government liberal?
What a monster. Kids are eating and having full bellies so they can go learn. And women are making their own health care decisions. And we're a top five business state. And we also rank in the top three of happiness. Look, they're going to label whatever they're going to label.
And so, Solomon, I got to ask you this question, because where does Walz stand? I mean, one of the attacks against Harris, she's too liberal. They're saying the exact same thing about Walz. How does he close any gaps, or does he make this, quote, liberal argument a little bit easier?
I think that he's going to make Kamala Harris more palatable. You know, when I looked at the people that she was considering for VP, it was like a parade of white guys. That's what she needed. Mm-hmm. She needed somebody like Tim Walz who could appeal to those who might be put off by the fact that she's an African-American and South Asian woman. Mm-hmm. And she got that with Tim Walz. I think somebody who's plain spoken, somebody who has some liberal policies, but somebody in a state that, quite frankly, on criminal justice does not skew as liberal as he might sound or as he might look or as people might think. Black people still 9 times more likely in Minnesota to be imprisoned than their white counterparts. And it has the largest disparity in terms of imprisonment of any state in the country as of 2019. And so they still got a long way to go on some of that stuff.
Andy Reilly, I want to bring you back in the conversation, and I'm going to read a pair of emails while I do this. This is first one's Robert from Wayne, who says, I like the Walz pick. He's sort of a diet Bernie Sanders that will appeal to the young people and more progressive voters. David emails and says, I moved to the Philly area in the fall of 2022, and I know Tim Walz. While he may have a folksy demeanor, he is definitely a far-left progressive and will do nothing to attract independents and disaffected Republicans. Josh Shapiro would have been a much better choice to balance the ticket ideologically. So, Andy, what do you make of that? I think there is this question of who is Tim Walz ideologically, and how will he be labeled in the race moving forward?
Correct. And I agree with the second email that you wrote in that this is all about appealing in 7 states to swing voters. This is what this is about. And in presidential elections, the main candidate to whom large almost everyone votes for always tacked to the middle. So the wise choice and the safe choice, as Republicans and Democrats have made over the years, is choose someone that can hold the base down. That's what Trump did with J.D. Vance. Someone may have argued it would have been a better pick to choose Glenn Youngkin because you could have a better suburban appeal, but he's going to tack to the middle. Kamala Harris is going to tack to the middle, and Walz will be there to hold down the liberal base. And we lift off some credentials, and Kyle said these are accomplishments of his governor. But I will tell you, what he's done as governor is not going to appeal to the center, the middle, the 50-yard line. Real questions on how he handled the rioting and looting in Minnesota. Crime rate up when it was down elsewhere. COVID, most restricted COVID anywhere across the country, created a hotline for people to call and tell rat on their neighbors about COVID violations. And there's a scandal, $250 million missing, basically stolen from COVID funds in Minnesota. So Tim has that, hey, I grew up in Nebraska, folksy, I can fire back at you. But Solomon's right. It's about a compliment to Vice President Harris. Shapiro, you saw recently how Senator Fetterman warned the Harris campaign that this guy's about his own ambition.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine Josh Shapiro in the next 60 days when he's confronted with a liberal or progressive view of Vice President Harris. What's he going to do? He would have been in a tough situation. He either's a team player and says something he doesn't believe, or he goes out and stinks up for his own. Waltz will toe the party line, as Solomon said. He won't be in conflict with the top, but people vote for the top of the ticket, and it's about how you appeal to the middle. Shapiro would have appealed to the swing Jewish voter, to the more independent voter. But once again, people vote for the presidential candidate, not vice presidential. So they did what most campaigns do. They chose someone who's going to appease the base as they drift center and try to appeal to independents themselves.
Yeah, I'm going to bring a caller in. First, I want to read a couple of emails. Trish says, appealing to middle and working class swing voters is the key to a Harris win in November. Walz is the only option who brings that credibility, and he has no negative baggage that will drive away progressive voters either. That's Trish's take. Also, Kimberly from Collingswood says, I think Walz is a great pick. He's a moderate, jovial, and fun to listen to, something we need now more than ever. Hmm. I want to bring in Dennis from Bethel Township, likes Walz and the experience he brings to the ticket. Dennis, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment about Walz?
I think Walz is a great choice. He's got a military background. He's got congressional experience. He's got foreign experience. Pleasant man. I think Josh Shapiro would have been fine, but I think that he would have dampened some of the enthusiasm. And I think what we really don't know is, was there some kind of connection made? It seems to me quite possible there's more of a connection between Walz and Harris than there might have been with Josh Shapiro and Harris. So I think it's an choice, and it's also, it's not just going to be the coastal, you know, East Coast, West Coast against the more middle of the country. I think Walz brings that middle of the country into the mix better for the Democrats than if Josh Shapiro had been the choice. And in terms of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro has got every opportunity, and I think he'll exercise it, to bang about the state.
Yeah.
To help Harris. And I think he could even do that better than if he was VP, because he'd have to be running around the country. So
right. Well, and he'll be in Philadelphia tonight. We know that, alongside Tim Walz. Thank you, Dennis, for that comment.
Dennis was in it.
Covered some ground there. That was well done.
Yes, thank you.
So let me, though, ask Kyle Stokes, because Dennis mentioned his congressional record, and there does seem to be some conflict between who Tim Walz was as a congressman and who he has been as governor. And it does leave me, as someone who's kind of just meeting him, questioning what he really believes. So, Kyle, can you give us some overview there?
Well, so, yeah, in 2018, when he ran for governor, the progressive wing of the party was not, you know, super excited about him. And in fact, they backed another candidate in the 2018 DFL primary here. And they pointed to a couple of different pieces that were concerning to them. You know, Walz voted at the time, you know, there was concern about a Syrian refugee crisis. We might remember that. And Walz voted against, voted for, I think, more stringent background checks was what he voted for. That was sort of alarming to folks who thought we should have a more open door to refugees. And more, I think, not to bury the lead, but he used to have an A rating from the National Rifle Association, and has touted and, in fact, you know, boasted about how his rating has flipped from an A to an F. And that's one kind of encapsulation of the move that Walz has made, as Andy mentions, you know, from sort of this centrist figure in a district that has been, you know, consistently conservative, in a state that used to send Democrats to Congress from rural areas. But that has been not the case for many years now. Most of the DFL party's, you know, strength is now concentrated to the urban areas of Minnesota. And Walz was representing a more rural district. You know, as a Democrat, at about the last time that that was something that was possible almost anywhere in this country. And I think that part of what happened was that, you know, if you talk to people on the left here, they say Walz listened, Walz negotiated, they appreciate how he leaned into disagreements and kind of embraced the sort of like driving agenda from the kind of progressive groups that are, you know, in touch with the leadership on the legislative side. And I think that it's the other sort of subtext of what we heard is that a lot of the heavy lifting on the specific policies that Walz kind of went out and played spokesperson for. And Walz has not, you know, claimed credit. He's always distributed it, but it shouldn't be lost that it was the legislature that did a lot of heavy lifting on those policy priorities. And Walz was sort of in it to say, just get something done. And that was sort of his approach to it. So there's a definite evolution of, you know, this centrist congressman to a figure who's now going out and playing offense for definitely policies that are further to the left than when he started out in Congress.
And what do you think about Tim Walz as a Democratic nominee for VP? We want to hear from you. You can call 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. Was it a shrewd choice or was it a slip up? We have those questions for you. Solomon, I want to ask you this question because we have an email from Sammy who says, I hadn't heard of Tim Walz before. I figured he would be the pick when I saw a picture of him and Josh Shapiro side by side. His features mirror Biden to a degree. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the strengths and weaknesses of Walz and then line him up with the strength and weaknesses of Harris. And how does this marriage, how does Walz fill in the gaps for her? Is it like a flip and does that do, you know, her some sort of benefit for the race in November?
Well, I think that Walz is somebody who brings some military experience. I think the fact that he's a teacher is big. That is a huge demographic within the Democratic Party. I think the fact that he is now pushing some progressive ideals, although he comes from a centrist background, I think that that helps to lock down the left of the party. I think that he brings the balance that she probably needed. I think one of the things with Shapiro mm-hmm. that might have been a little problematic is that Shapiro is so charismatic and so young. And looks great, you know, next to Kamala Harris, that people are looking at the backup quarterback now and saying, you know, bring in this guy off the bench. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think Walz will play the good soldier. I think that he understands the chain of command, having been in a military outfit. And I think that he's going to bring the balance to the ticket that she needs. I think racially, ethnically, and I think ideologically. He brings more balance than the other choices might have.
Yeah.
Some folks disappointed and want to bring in an email from Artie who says, I'm a Democrat and was thinking I'd vote for Harris, although I think she's a bad woke leftist. If she had chosen Shapiro, Artie says he would have leaned Harris. Now he's leaning toward voting for Trump as the lesser of two evils. Mm. Heidi also disappointed, but in a very different way. Heidi says, very disappointed. Walz has been described as a nice Midwestern teddy bear. We don't need a care bear. We need an attack dog. And actually, I want to play this clip now. This is Tim Walz, while campaigning for governor of Minnesota, recording a video on his phone about how he replaced a busted part in his car. Let's play this clip.
Hey, everybody. Tim here. 11 days till the election, but it's my pro tip of the day out on the road. I got to show you this. This right here is the headlight harness on a 2014 Ford Edge. Ford, this is unacceptable. It burned out hot on the connector. So for $799 at Napa Auto Parts here in the city, you can replace this. Just clip off the back, use some shrink wrap connectors on there, tape it back together and put it back in. It's about a 5-minute fix and you're back on the road safe and sound.
All right, Andy, does that really work, that kind of sort of everyman charm? Do you think that's an advantage for Walz, or maybe people will tire of it when they're exposed to it more?
I think with the record of governor, it doesn't work, and his policies doesn't work. I mean, it'll play to some extent. Remember that in 2016, there was a large non-college-educated white vote that went for Trump that somewhat dissipated in 20. So they could try to use that to play to the, you know, the Wisconsin base, which is going to be a swing state, saying he's one of you, a farmer background type of thing. Yeah. But you got to remember, too, that Vice President Harris, when she ran for president in 20, didn't get a sniff from the Democratic voters, didn't even make it to the first primary. Mm-hmm. And I would submit to you, if Biden had not chose not to run, Harris wouldn't be your nominee now. Mm. And what you're hearing, seeing now is some excitement for Harris, but mostly relief. Prior to when Biden was still the presumptive candidate, only 35% of the Democratic voters were excited. And you even heard Governor Haley say, hey, you're looking, a lot of voters don't want Trump or Biden. The first party that ditched that candidate is going to have a huge advantage. So I think you're seeing a lot of that right now. The Democratic voters are relieved. They're rallying around Harris. But remember, there was no great love for Harris candidacy when she ran for president alone. So some folksiness, does it play maybe in the rural areas? We've seen in the last 30 years more suburban area. I was a county commissioner in Delaware County. It was yeah. all Republican. But across the country, suburban areas become Democrat. Rural areas have become Republican.
So sort of reaching back for something that's already gone is kind of what you're getting at there.
I do. I do believe. And so will he sell in the rural areas? Maybe. But, you know, I don't think to a large, significant amount. But when you're talking that an election can be decided in a state, a swing state, with 30,000, 40,000 mm-hmm. votes, it may matter. It may. Traditionally, it is not. But it may matter to soften up some rural voters that may go vote for them. But, you know, the question is, hey, I can't vote for Kamala. She's not my policy. But I like this Waltz guy. So maybe, but I don't think so.
Hmm. Well, we'll have a lot more after yes. a short break. But the big question today is, do you like the pick? What do you make of the pick? Do you think Tim Walz helps the Democrats or hurts the Democrats in November? You can email us, studio2@whyy.org. You can also give us a call, 888-477-9499. We'll be back with Solomon Jones, Andy Riley, Kyle Stokes. You are listening to Studio 2 on WHYY in Philadelphia. Much more to come on Vice Presidential Politics.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. And we're going to continue our conversation now about Kamala Harris tapping Tim Walz as her running mate. Here with us, we have Kyle Stokes, reporter for Axios Twin Cities, Solomon Jones, Philadelphia Inquirer columnist and WURD radio host, and Andy Riley, Republican National Committee man for Pennsylvania.
And keep sending in your questions and comments. What do you think about Tim Walz as the Democratic nominee for vice president? Was it a great choice or was it a slip up? You can email us, studio2@whyy.org. You can also call 888-477-9499. And we want to bring in a caller, Grayson in Philadelphia, who had hoped for a different candidate. Grayson, you are on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Yeah, I think that Walz is a fine choice, but I personally was pulling for Secretary Pete to get the nod. I think that myself and the over 40 million Gen Z voters that have turned 18 since 2020 would have no problem voting for a black woman and a gay man on the same ticket. And unfortunately, I think there might be a bit of cowardice on the part of the DNC to not put a gay man on the same ticket as a black woman.
Interesting perspective from Grayson, and I think it's actually a good time to bring in this email from Alex in Monco, who also had a comment about those same identity politics. Mm-hmm. I think Josh Shapiro is great, and I'm excited to see where his career goes. That said, I was relieved that Kamala Harris didn't choose him as her running mate. The worldwide response to October 7th showed Jews are even less popular than we thought we were, and I don't want anti-Semitism to sink the Democratic ticket. So kind of two sides of a coin there, but two voters thinking about the identity politics at play on the ticket, Cherry.
Yeah, and I want to ask you, how much do you think identity politics played into this pick? I ask you this because, you know, Vice President Kamala Harris checks a few boxes.
Yes.
Did she just want, and you said it was a parade of white guys, did she just want yes. a white guy who only checked the white guy box?
No, I don't think so. I think she wanted somebody who could do the job. Remember, she's been vice president for 3.5 yeah. years. She knows what the job is. The job is to support the policies of the president, to break ties in the Senate, which she did at a record yeah. pace, and also to be there in case something, God forbid, happens to the president. That's the job. Anything else is what you make it, is what the president assigns yeah. to you, right? It's not anything else constitutionally. And so I think she wanted somebody who could do that job, who could be that cheerleader, who could have her back, somebody who she could bounce ideas off of, and somebody who could be in the room when she was making those crucial decisions as president. I think that she chose the person that she thought would best fit. Now, in terms of the identity politics, you know, I've talked about this before. The fact that Josh Shapiro was somebody who was going to be Israel, backing Israel no matter what, somebody who was Jewish and would put off some voters because of that, I think that had to be a consideration as well, given that she is a Black and South Asian woman on one side of the ticket. And so all of those things had to come into play. I think that at the end of the day, what the Harris campaign has said is that it was about electability. Yeah. Can we win? And I think that has to be the first consideration, because guess what? If it's not, nothing else matters.
And that's Solomon Jones's take. Andy, do you agree with this from your point of view?
Somewhat. You cannot deny that the pro-Palestinian faction of the Democratic Party is stronger now. And you can see Congress people getting elected, and they have a stronger voice in that area, particularly in states like Minnesota and Michigan. And, you know, Minnesota, despite being a hard deep blue state, you know, Trump only lost it by 7 points last time. And Minnesota, obviously, or Michigan, obviously has a key Senate race. You got to remember, too, there's a Senate map going on yep. here where there's yep. 8 seats now held by Democrats where the Republicans are up on
including
4 of them.
Including here in Pennsylvania. Yeah.
yeah, including in Pennsylvania. So there's a Senate map at play, too, and you got to pick a candidate that's not going to hurt you in certain races. But frankly, you know, I don't buy that America is a racist country. I don't buy that. I think we're – you know, I'm tired, and a lot of Republicans and independents are tired of hyphenated. And what the people I know, and when people use the word race or they were chosen this because of the color, it sets our country back, frankly. Most of the Republicans I know that they're fighting, they don't want people to get special rights, but they want everyone to have equal rights. And I frankly think that, like Solomon, she likely made the pick, or her team made the pick, to make her look presidential, to have someone who was going to support her. And I do buy into the fact that you don't want to be painted as a bi-coastal ticket, mm-hmm. the Hollywood, New York ticket. You know, this kind of cuts against that argument. And while people will come after Tim Walz's policies, and there's plenty there to go after, he can always fall back on, well, I'd like to respond, but I'm going out hunting now. I'm going out ice fishing. You know, he's going to play that rural card, I'm one of you kind of card. But it all comes down to what is best for Vice President Harris. As she comes off this honeymoon, where folks are relieved that Biden's not, and now the comparisons will come. You will see quotes of her when she talks about how the country needs to be more woke. And remember, we're talking about independent voters here. There's going to be tons of clips of folks of Vice President Harris saying things that independent voters are not going to like. She needs to have someone who has her back, and as she tacks to the middle and changes her positions, has someone that locks down her progressive base.
Let me read in this email from Rebecca now, who says, being an independent who is more moderate in issues, I was fairly excited to vote for Harris Shapiro. Shapiro brings a level of seriousness that is desperately needed at this time in politics. He would have added more balance to the Harris ticket for sure. I think Harris may be trying to please some on the left with her pick. That's Rebecca's perspective. But before we wrap up this hour, I want to make sure, Solomon and Andy, I get your take on where Josh Shapiro goes from here. By all accounts, he seems to have been the runner-up in this race. Was this a good thing for his profile, Solomon, or will it be sort of a mark of losing moving forward as he tries to establish himself as a national presence?
Not at all, because I think that if Kamala Harris wins, and I think she does have a good chance of winning, I don't think it's a honeymoon for her. I think it's momentum for her, and what they have to do is keep up that momentum and build on it and not let it dissipate. But I think that what will happen with Josh Shapiro, is that Josh Shapiro, if she should win, would become a member of the cabinet.
I think so.
I could see Josh Shapiro getting the nod as U.S. Attorney General. I could see Josh Shapiro getting the nod as some other cabinet position. But I don't think he goes away. I think he becomes part of a coalition of people who she puts together as she decides who's going to run the country and who's going to have what role.
Andy, yeah, where does Josh Shapiro go from here? Yeah, long seen as a rising star.
The choice of Tim Walz was the best thing ever happened to Josh Shapiro.
Really?
No question in my mind, for a number of reasons. So the latter reason, the least important, you have a sitting senator in your state, which is really unprecedented, reaching out, Senator Fetterman reaching out to the Harris campaign saying, don't choose him. He's too ambitious. He's going to put his own ambition ahead of the team. Okay, so Shapiro does not get chosen. And therefore, he now can play. He'll be there tonight. He'll be the launching it. He'll be the face of the party, and he can be the team player. Had he been the choice, he would have been on a campaign trail. And everywhere he went, he would have been confronted with comments that Vice President Harris had said that were woke or something far to the left. And he would have had to be a team player, to defend her.
So you're saying he maintains his centrality or the perception of his moderacy.
Maintains his, and also his executive label. That's important to judge. If you've met Josh Shapiro, he's not a number two man. That's not his nature, not what he wants to be. Mm-hmm. I agree with Solomon. If you laid out attorney general, that may be too hard to pass up. But I don't see Josh Shapiro leaving somewhere for a rank and file cabinet position, even if Vice President Harris wins. So I think this was a good thing for Harris and for Shapiro in the long run. And I'm sure when he thinks about it himself, he probably thinks it that
really?
Way too.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Fascinating discussion about Josh Shapiro's future. I want to just sort of also go back to the vice presidential pick, Tim Walz, and talk about the contrast of Walz versus his vice presidential opponent, J.D. Vance. Let's talk about that. And Kyle, I want to bring you back into the conversation. But before I do, I want to sort of play this clip of Governor Tim Walz on Morning Joe in late July, contrasting himself with J.D.
What I know is that people like J.D. Vance know nothing about small town America. My town had 400 people in it, 24 kids in my graduating class, 12 were cousins, and he gets it all wrong. It's not about hate. It's not about collapsing in. The golden rule there is mind your own damn business.
And so, Kyle, got to ask you this, because, part of what you have to do as a vice presidential candidate is help your top of the ticket win, help them govern, and make sure that you do no harm. What lessons do you think the Harris campaign learned from the Trump campaign on this Vance pick? And will Walz be able to do those things that he has to accomplish?
Well, I think, I'm just reflecting on what your guests have talked about how the Harris ticket might have moved away from the opportunity to tack to the middle by picking Walz. And I think that there's something to that argument, in terms of what is the harm? What was the, if we're talking about a vice presidential pick and the idea is first do no harm, what is the harm? Would the harm be to, kind of rile the left by choosing Shapiro over Walz because of his, sort of the discomfort that people on the left might have with him? Particularly, we haven't talked much about the issues that he's had with his support of school choice legislation versus
school vouchers, yeah.
Walz not, having the issues, with his union base. Or is it more about playing to the middle? Is it centrist voters? I don't know that I know the answer to that. I'm just a reporter. I have no idea. But I think that, it depends on what you think about the harm that needed to be done that Harris needed to avoid, rather. Did she need to avoid pissing off the center, or did she need to avoid angering the left? I think that while there are ways that Walz plays to that centrist, middle of the road, rural voter and can speak that language. I mean, can Josh Shapiro pheasant hunt? This is a question I have.
I'm not sure.
I mean,
he has a mean jumper, so he can do that type of shooting. I know that.
I mean, so it's a, you know, or is the bigger point that the main issue was that Harris wanted to shore up her left flank. And there are ways that Walz tacks to the middle. There are ways that Walz speaks the language of the rural voter. And so it makes you think that maybe Harris is trying to have it both ways. But as your guests are talking about, there's a pretty good argument the other way that you can't have it both ways, and that this is an argument that this is a pick that mostly shores up her support on the left.
Let me read in this email from Kristen in Germantown, who says, I was rooting for Shapiro. However, I was disappointed regarding the anti-Semitism within the Democratic Party. Shapiro's position on Gaza is really no different than the other VP picks, or even Harris herself, and Fetterman's lack of endorsement didn't help either. That's Kristen's perspective. As we wrap up the hour, Andy Riley, Solomon Jones, in the political world, in the media world, we obsess about these things. Do either of you think Tim Walz really makes a difference at the end of the day? And Andy Riley, I'll start with you.
Not a determinative difference. Obviously, everyone makes a difference, but not something that's going to change the state. I will say quickly to Solomon's earlier point, I believe Tim Walz, when they examine his liberal record, progressive record, makes the presidential pick Harris look stronger. Remember, Dan Quayle made Vice President Bush look awful good. Biden made Obama look awful good. You do not want someone there who's going to outshine you. And I think there's something to that. I hate to say that, but I think there's something to that.
Solomon, do you think Tim Walz is a meaningful pick? Does it actually expand the coalition? Does it actually bring new voters to the ticket?
I think that they're trying to appeal to independent voters. I think everybody else has already decided, right?
Yeah.
Donald Trump has tens of millions of voters who have, you know, pledged that they're going to vote for him despite 34 felony convictions. He's going to be sentenced in September. I mean, the guy, you know, has baggage on top of baggage. They're going to vote for him anyway. Kamala Harris's people are going to vote for her anyway because they were going to vote for whoever the Democratic candidate was going to be. I think Tim Walz helps to shore up some of those people who are undecided, people who don't look like Kamala Harris, people who are in the middle that they need to appeal to. I think that's what this pick is about.
Perfect place to leave it.
Yeah.
And we want to thank everyone who is with us this hour. Let me just remind you who we spoke with. Kyle Stokes, reporter for Axios Twin Cities. Kyle, thanks for joining us.
Of course, absolutely.
Solomon Jones, Philadelphia Inquirer columnist and WURD radio host. Solomon, always a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
And Andy Riley, Republican National Committee man for Pennsylvania, the great state of Pennsylvania. Andy, thanks so much for your time.
Happy to be here.
And we're going to get Andy and Solomon back for a sports show at some point because in every break, they
yeah,
were just talking about the Phillies and the Eagles. They're worried. They're worried. They're worried, folks.
And that, friends, wraps up our show. Thank you to everybody who emailed, to all the callers. We appreciate you, to everybody who commented on Facebook. And thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and John Ahrens. Al Banks engineered today's show. Kevin McCrory is the executive producer. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We will talk with you tomorrow.